Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtyatya Deshatarane Trinadapi Sunichena Toror Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harinama 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 Eva Kevalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam. This is the Ramayana, Part 1, entitled Betrayed, Chapter 4, The Trial of Strength. The following morning, Janak again came before Vishvamitra. He bowed low before the sage and touched his feet. Then, asking in a pleasing voice, "Please instruct me what I should do for you today, O sinless one. You are worthy in every way of receiving my service." Hearing these words from the virtuous and gentle king, Vishvamitra asked that they now be shown the bow. Janaka assented, but before taking them to see the bow, he described its history. Long past, in a former age, the bow had belonged to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva had become angry with the other demigods when they had denied him a share of the sacrificial offerings made by the sages. Lord Shiva had threatened them with the bow, saying, "I shall now sever your worshipful heads from your bodies. Stand ready on the battlefield if you have any valor." But the demigods relented and quickly worshipped the infuriated Lord Shiva. They had managed to appease him, whereupon he gave the bow to them. The famous bow was then given by the gods to Janaka's ancestor, Devaratta, after he had fought for them in a battle against the demons. It had since been kept in the king's family, being worshipped as it were Shiva himself. Janaka continued speaking to the sage and the princes, who listened with great curiosity. "Once I was performing a sacrifice to please the gods in order to get a worthy successor in my line. As the sacrificial ground was being prepared with a golden plowshare, a wonderful child appeared from out of the earth itself. This female child, who became known by the name of Sita, grew up in my palace as my daughter. Her beauty is matchless. I have raised her with love and will give her in marriage to whoever can show exceptional prowess. Various rulers and princes have approached me and have asked for her hand. Seeing all these kings, I set a standard for winning Sita. I said, 'Whoever so can hold and string the mighty bow of Lord Shiva will win the princess. Many proud kings thought that they would easily bend the bow. However, coming before that bow, they were soon deprived of their valor and pride. They were hardly able to move the bow even slightly, far less lift and string it. Angry at their failure, numerous kings together besieged Mithila for one full year. When my resources were exhausted, I prayed to the gods for support. I then received from them a vast army equipped with every kind of weapon. That celestial army quickly dispersed those bellicose kings in all directions. Thus, this bow remains here, unconquered, and awaiting some truly powerful king. Janaka looked at the two royal brothers. Ram's fame had reached him, and he felt sure that the prince would win his daughter's hand. As the king beheld Ram's beautiful features, his powerful physique and noble bearing, he longed for the prince to pass the test and become his son-in-law. He stood before Vishwamitra with folded palms. "Come now, O sage, and bring these boys with you. If any of them can string the bow, then the hand of the divinely born Sita will be won." Janaka led them to the part of his great palace where the bow was kept. It was stored in an iron chest, which was adorned with gold engravings, and it was covered over with numerous flower garlands. 300 powerfully built men somehow managed to move the chest to the center of the hall, where it lay. Janaka turned towards Ram. "Here is the wonderful celestial bow. It has been kept and worshipped by the Janakas for many generations. Not even the gods, demons, yakshas, gandharvas, or kinnaras can string it. How then can an ordinary man? Gaze now upon this bow, O Ram." Janaka ordered that the chest be open. As the lid was lifted, the brilliant bow was revealed. It spread a golden glow all around. Constructed of pure horn, it was skillfully worked with gold and silver images of the pastimes of the demigods. Hundreds of golden bells and ornaments hung from the bow, which was studded with diamonds and other gems. Seeing the bow, the two princes gasped in appreciation. Ram bowed down in respect and then walked slowly around it. He looked towards Vishwamitra, who nodded slightly. Understanding Vishwamitra's indication, Rama stood with joined palms at the bow's center. He turned to Janaka. "I wish to attempt your test. I shall now try to lift this heavenly bow and to gauge its weight and strength." While being extolled by Vishwamitra and other sages, who uttered "Jai! Victory!" Rama placed his hand upon the bow. There was complete silence in the hall. Janaka held his breath as Rama stood motionless. Vishwamitra, knowing the extent of Rama's power, smiled slightly. In the balcony of the hall stood Sita. She looked at Ram, feeling a natural attraction for the prince. Until then, she had never been interested in any of her suitors, although the most powerful kings from all around the world had come there. To the gentle Sita, they were all arrogant and overly proud of themselves. Sita was deeply religious. All her life, she had prayed that Vishnu might become her husband. As she watched Ram approach the bow, she felt her love for the Lord being awakened. Was this Vishnu himself? Becoming absorbed in her loving sentiment, Sita felt anxiety. Would Ram string the bow and become her husband? She held the matrimonial garland with trembling hands. Suddenly, Ram seized the bow by its middle part and raised it high above his head. A gasp of astonishment filled the hall. It was inconceivable. Ram tossed the bow slightly to gauge its weight. Placing one end of the colossal bow on the ground, Ram then moved to the other end and strung it. He pulled the string and bent the bow around into a semicircle. Suddenly it broke, and a sound like the crash of thunder reverberated around the hall. The earth shook as if there were an earthquake. Everyone was stunned, and everyone was rendered senseless for a few moments. Janaka was amazed. He turned to Vishvamitra. Now I have witnessed Rama's strength. His achievement is incredible. Having secured Rama as her husband, Sita will bring undying fame to my family. Janaka's eyes were filled with tears. Surely, Ram was a divine personality. There could be no doubt. Till then, no king had been able to move the bow even slightly. Some could hardly even look upon it. But Ram had handled it as if it were a piece of bamboo. The king looked up to Sita in the balcony. She was filled with delight upon seeing Rama's feet, and her breast heaved with excitement. Awaiting her father's indication to come down, she stood surrounded by her many female attendants. Janaka turned to speak to Rama, who stood peacefully, having replaced the broken bow in its chest. I shall now fulfill my pledge to give Sita's hand to whoever could string this bow. Sita is dearer to me than my own life, but I gladly offer her to you. Sita came down from the balcony with a garland of golden flowers in her hands and stood by her father. She was resplendent in a silk sari of deep maroon, a necklace of pearls shining on her bosom. As she walked, her golden anklets tinkled, and her diamond earrings swung to and fro. Smiling gently, she shyly lifted her eyes a little and looked at Ram. He caught her glance. Both felt their hearts moved by love. In that moment, their union was forged. Sita's father signaled, and Sita went before Ram. She placed the garland around his neck, indicating her acceptance of him as her husband. She blushed slightly and kept her eyes down. Walking slowly, she went back to her father, who felt as if his heart might burst with happiness. The king wanted to perform the marriage ceremony as soon as possible. He asked for Vishvamitra's permission, and when the sage agreed, the king arranged for swift messengers to go to Ayodhya to inform Dasharatha. The ministers of Janaka left immediately and arrived at Ayodhya after 3 days. They quickly went to the palace and were ushered into the presence of Dasharatha, who appeared to them like a powerful god. Put at ease by the emperor's benign expression and gentle words of welcome, the ministers politely told him of the events in Mithila. The emperor was delighted to hear the submission of Janaka's envoys. Ram and Lakshman were well. They had conquered over the demons, and more than that, Rama had now won the beautiful Sita for his bride. Dasharatha recalled how he had been contemplating the marriage of his son, even as Vishvamitra had arrived at his palace. The sage must have been sent by Providence, by whose arrangement this union had surely been made. After consulting with his counselors, Dasharatha made up his mind to leave the next day for Mithila. Taking with him his ministers and preceded by a party of priests, Dasharatha went the next morning towards Mithila, with his army marching close behind. They arrived after 5 days. Dasharatha approached Janaka, who graciously received the abundant riches brought as gifts. Janaka embraced the emperor, and the two old friends sat together discussing the wedding. Janaka told Dasharatha how Sita had appeared from the earth. He also told him of a prophecy he had heard. Once, the celestial seer Narada Muni informed me that Sita is Vishnu's eternal consort, and that he would one day become her husband in this world. I thus devised a test which only could be possible for Vishnu to pass. Your son has now passed that difficult test, and he must therefore be Sita's eternal husband. Dasharatha was again astonished to hear of Ram's divinity. He still found it hard to believe, having raised Rama as his child. He looked at the son who had stood before him modestly with bowed head and folded palms. Dasharatha was overpowered by love. His loving sentiments overcame any thoughts of Rama's divinity. The emperor looked again at Janaka and said, "I approve this marriage in every way. Perform the ceremony under the guidance of learned Brahmins. O King, the success of a gift depends upon the way it is given. Therefore, be sure that all the necessary rites are properly observed without loss of time." Dasharatha wanted to ensure that the marriage ceremony was performed carefully according to scriptural codes. He did not want any ill fortune created by neglect of sacred rituals. Such errors would blight the marriage, and create future difficulties for the couple. Janaka issued instructions to his ministers and then sat with Dasharatha in his great palace hall. Both of them listened as Vasishtha recited Rama's family lineage. After hearing of Rama's ancestry, beginning with the sun god, Janaka recited Sita's genealogy, describing his own ancestry, which began with Lord Brahma. When Janaka finished, Vishvamitra spoke. He suggested that Sita's sister, Urmila, wed Rama's brother, Lakshmana. The sage also advised that Janaka's brother, Kushadvaja, allow his two daughters to marry Bharat and Shatrughna. Then there could be one ceremony for all four marriages. Rising from his seat with joy, Janaka said, "Let it be so." He said it again and again. He fell prostrate before Vishvamitra and said, "I am ever your servant. Your words are worthy of my worship, and I stand commanded by you. Let the wedding take place tomorrow, a day marked by favorable stars." As the two kings sat talking together, the sun gradually set. Janaka took his leave from Dasharatha and departed for his personal quarters. Flanked by ministers and 100 warriors, thousands of golden oil lamps lit up the hall as the crowds of brahmanas made their way out, all of them constantly uttering the auspicious Vedic hymns. The following morning, Dasharatha rose early and performed the first ritual for invoking good fortune. He had his four sons brought before him and then gave to the Brahmana priests 100,000 cows on behalf of each of them. The emperor also distributed gold and gems to the thousands of rishis assembled in Mithila. They were there to witness the wedding. The four princes shaved their heads and dressed in silk robes, putting on brilliant jeweled ornaments. Surrounded by the four handsome and effulgent youths, Dasharatha shone like Lord Brahma. Surrounded by the celestial gardens of the four quarters, a great pavilion had been erected for the ceremony. Its walls were constructed of marble, and it was supported on numerous pillars studded with sparkling gems. Fragrant and brightly colored flower garlands were draped everywhere, and the air was filled with the scent of black aloe incense. Large stands, constructed of mahogany inlaid with coral and pearl, holding rows of golden seats, surrounded the sacrificial area. Kings from all around the world, along with their ministers, filled the stands, eager to see the wedding. The entire pavilion was crowded with jubilant people who cried out, "All glories to Ram and Sita!" Hundreds of elderly Brahmins wearing simple loincloths with clean white threads hanging from their left shoulders were seated around the sacrificial arena. They recited Vedic hymns continuously, and the melodic rise and fall of their metrical chanting filled the pavilion. Musical instruments played while expert singers sang the praises of Rama and Sita. The whole assembly appeared like an exuberant festival held in the heavens by the gods. Dasharatha and his four sons approached the sacrificial fire, which was tended to by Vasishtha. And when they were seated, the four princes saw Sita, and the other three princes entered the arena. The princes' minds were captivated by the beauty of their wives-to-be. Adorned with shining silk garments, jewels, and gold ornaments, the princesses appeared like four goddesses descended from the celestial realm. They sat down opposite their intended spouses, glancing down shyly, and Vasishtha immediately began the wedding ceremony. Janaka stepped forward, speaking in a voice choked with emotion. "My dear Rama, I now give to you Sita, my own beloved daughter. She is to be your assistant in all your religious duties. She will always remain exclusively devoted to you and will follow you like your own shadow. Take her hand in yours and accept her. I bless you both." Janaka took Rama's hand and placed it over Sita's. Vasishtha sprinkled sanctified water over their clasped hands, signifying the confirmation of the gift of Sita. Holding Sita's hand, Rama led her slowly around the sacred fire. From the upper reaches of the pavilion, the gods were heard to exclaim, "Excellent! Bravo!" Celestial flowers rained down upon Rama and Sita. The entire assembly of onlookers erupted with a shout of joy. Both Dasharatha and Janaka looked with tearful eyes at the newlywed couple. Rama's complexion, resembling a celestial emerald, contrasted the pure white features of Sita. They were both covered with golden flower petals, and their many jewels shone brilliantly. As they walked hand in hand around the fire, Sita looked down in shyness, while Rama smiled at the loudly cheering crowds in the pavilion. Each of Rama's three brothers, one after another, in the order of their seniority, took the hand of one of the other three princesses. Lakshman was united with Urmila, Bharat with Mandavi, and Shatrughna with Shrutakirti. The three effulgent princes, holding their brides' hands, went around the sacred fire along with Janaka and the many sages. Cries of happiness filled the pavilion, while the demigods played their celestial drums, and bevy of apsaras danced and gandharvas sang. The sages recited Vedic text, and the blast of conch shells was heard everywhere. All those present in the assembly were lost in ecstasy. The ceremony ended at midday, and the kings and princes gradually retired to their tents. Headed by Dasharatha, Janaka, and the four newly married couples. The following day, Vishvamitra, after taking permission from both Dasharatha and Janaka, left for the northern Himalayan ranges, his mind intent on the performance of asceticism. Janaka bestowed upon his daughters a dowry consisting of hundreds of thousands of cows and an equal number of elephants, horses, chariots, and foot soldiers. The king, whose wealth was virtually unlimited, gave away millions of pieces of silk and cotton textiles, tens of thousands of hand-woven carpets, heaps of gold, silver, and jewels, and hundreds of richly adorned maids for each of the brides. After a few days, Dasharatha left for Ayodhya, proceeding at the head of a large army. As the king, surrounded by his sons and the host of sages, was traveling along the broad road that led to Ayodhya, he suddenly saw a strange omen. Birds began to cry out fearfully and swoop low over their heads. Witnessing this foreboding sign, Dasharatha's heart quivered and his mind became fearful. The king asked Vasishtha if he knew the cause of these omens. "These signs portend some grave danger, but here are groups of deer crossing our path from left to right. This indicates our deliverance from that danger. Therefore, you should not fear." A fierce tempest blew up. The sun was enveloped in darkness, and the sky became black. Trees crashed to the ground, and the earth shook. A dreadful dust storm swirled around the travelers, confounding their senses. They were rendered virtually unconscious. Suddenly, from out of the darkness, appeared the fearsome sage Parashurama. He was dressed in tiger skins and had matted locks coiled at the crown of his head. Dasharatha and his followers immediately recognized him. Although born as a Brahmin, Parashurama was famous for his prowess as a fighter. In former ages, he had single-handedly overcome the world's warriors, annihilating them by the millions. The sage had become enraged when his father was killed by warrior kings, and he wreaked an awful vengeance. He had roamed the globe and massacring the entire Kshatriya race. He now stood before Dasharatha, holding a battle axe in one hand, and in the other a fierce arrow which resembled a streak of lightning. He was as tall as two men, and he had upon his shoulder a great bow. Appearing as irresistible as the fire of universal destruction, he blocked the path like an impassable mountain. The sages and Dasharatha's party quickly gathered together. They took water to wash Parashurama's feet and hands and offered him gentle words of welcome. Accepting the honor offered by the sages, Parashurama looked at Rama and said in a grave voice, "O Rama, I have heard of your strength. By breaking Lord Shiva's bow, you have performed an incredible feat. How can I, who has formed a great enmity with all warriors, tolerate hearing of such prowess existing in a king? I have here another sacred bow, that of Lord Vishnu. Let us see your power now. Fit this celestial arrow upon this bow and simply draw it to its full length. If you are able to accomplish this task, then I shall challenge you to single combat. When you stand on the battlefield and are swept away by the force of my weapons, you shall earn undying fame. Dasharatha threw up his hands in horror. Knowing well of Parashuram's power, he feared for Rama's life. He approached the sage with joined palms and entreated him to spare Rama. Paying no heed at all to the king, Parashuram continued to speak only to Rama. Both the broken bow by you and this one here were constructed by the architect of the gods, Vishvakarma. The one you broke formerly belonged to Lord Shiva. However, this one here was Vishnu's property. It is thus more powerful than the one you broke, for Vishnu is always Shiva's superior. Parashuram took the bow from his shoulder. With furrowed brows, he gazed at Rama with bloodshot eyes. Not immediately recognizing the prince's divine identity. The bow has been passed down from Lord Vishnu to my ancestors, then finally to me. I now offer it to you, O Ram. Consider it your sacred duty as a warrior to always accept a challenge. Exhibit now the strength of your arms. Parashuram held out the enormous bow. Rama, smiling slightly, stepped forward. I have heard of your tremendous feat in fighting and killing all the world's warriors 21 times. You have fully avenged your father with this commendable action. Even as a child, Rama had been told the story of Parashurama. The many kings killed by that sage had become debauched, and it was by divine arrangement that they had been annihilated. As a sage, Parashuram had performed much asceticism and had finally been personally empowered by Vishnu himself. By dint of Vishnu's own desire and the power, Parashuram had been able to exterminate the warrior class. Now, Vishnu, appearing as Rama, again stood before the sage. He continued to speak. You, Parashuram, are a Brahmana sage and are therefore worthy of my worship. However, since you despise me, seeing me belong to the warrior class, I shall now display to you my personal prowess. Rama seized the bow along with the blazing arrow from Parashurama's hand. He strung the bow in an instant and drew the arrow back to his ear. Looking angrily at Parashuram, he said, Where shall I discharge this deadly shaft, O sage? As you are my superior, I dare not aim it at you. Hosts of gods had assembled in the sky. Seeing the celestial bow drawn in anger by Ram, and fearing that he may destroy the heavens, they all cried out, Vishnu, save us! Save us! Ram, standing with the bow, blazed as brilliant as the sun, and Lord Parashuram fell back in astonishment. He felt his own power completely eclipsed by Ram. Suddenly realizing Rama's identity, Parashuram spoke in faltering tones. "You appear invincible, and I can understand that you must surely be the imperishable Lord Vishnu himself. I accept defeat, but I am not ashamed. You are indeed the Lord of all the three worlds." Parashuram had recalled how Vishnu had long ago said he would come again to take back the divine energy he had given to the sage. The warrior sage folded his palms and said, "O Rama, O all-powerful one, you have already divested me of my power and my pride. Please release this arrow upon my desires for heavenly pleasures, and thereby burn them all to ashes. I wish only to serve you. With all my material aspirations destroyed by you, I shall become fit to become your eternal servant. This is my deepest desire." Parashurama bowed low before Rama, who then fired the fearful shaft. The sage immediately vanished along with the arrow. Then Varuna, the god of the waters, appeared, and Ram gave him the celestial bow to keep on behalf of the demigods. The exchange between Rama and Parashuram was heard and understood only by Vasishta and a few other spiritually powerful Brahmins. The king and the others present had been wholly confounded by the events that had occurred. They were amazed and relieved to see that Rama had somehow appeased the sage. Everything was again calm, and the party resumed their journey, soon approaching Ayodhya. Word had already reached Ayodhya of the approach of Dasharatha's party. Thousands of Brahmins and citizens had come some miles out of the city to greet them. They stood along the wide roads, throwing rice grains and fresh green leaves in front of Dasharatha. Seated aboard his chariot, the emperor and his sons waved at the people. They moved slowly through the crowds and entered the city in state. It was decorated with flags and festoons and strewn all over with flowers. Trumpet fanfares sounded, and joyous people thronged around the king's party as it went slowly along the main thoroughfare. Dasharatha entered his own white marble palace, which resembled Mount Himavata. He was greeted by his wives, who had organized a ceremonious reception for their sons and their new daughters-in-law. After the greeting, the princes and princesses went to their respective palaces and began to enjoy life in Ayodhya, exactly like the gods in heaven. After a few weeks, Dasharatha asked Bharat and Shatrughna to go to the kingdom of their father-in-law, Kushadvaja, who himself had no sons. The emperor instructed the princes to assist Kushadvaja in the affairs of state. Along with their wives and a large army, Bharat and Shatrughna therefore soon left the capital and went to Rajagriha, where Kushadvaja lived.